products. So please check that out. So thank you so much. We're wrapping up this hour of Wednesday Talk Radio, and we looked at the Hormuz tolls, of course, the Northwest Ordinance, the gift of John Elk, and it's been a lot to go through. Thank you for listening and joining me today. And I'll be back tomorrow on Thursday Talk Radio, and we'll probably take a closer look at what's going on with the truth, you know, whether the truth is holding or not. Trump is very volatile, so it may be completely different by tomorrow, and we'll discuss that. So once again, I'm Jacqueline Keeler. Thank you for listening and for, no, it was quiet, I can't say for calling in, but thank you for listening and for standing for rights of all U.S. All people, you know, regardless of where they come from, for citizenship. And stay tuned for more KU programming this today. So thank you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 9 a.m.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Earth Day is around the corner. Celebrate with KBOO at our Earth Day tree planting open house, April 22nd, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mingle with other Earth-conscious radio heads, enjoy snacks and drinks, and become a part of KBOO's roots. That's April 22nd, 11 a.m. at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, for KBOO's Earth Day Tree Planting Open House.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience produced at a different location every week.
Curious is what shapes the issues. Why is it this way? Why in the breadbasket of America are the food pantries going bare?
I'm Lynn Borton, host of Choose to Be Curious, a show all about curiosity. Today on Sprouts, we explore curiosity, local journalism, and democracy. Come, choose to be curious with us. Art Cullen is the editor and co-owner with his brother John of the Storm Lake Times Pilot, a weekly newspaper in that Northwest Iowa county seat, a town of about 12,000. In 2017, Art won the Pulitzer Prize in editorial writing for editorials fueled by tenacious reporting, impressive expertise, and engaging writing that successfully challenged powerful corporate agricultural interests in Iowa. And to my eyes, he looks a lot like Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain, which calls to mind that writer's quip, never tell the truth to people who are not worthy of it. I suspect a good deal of what is both powerful and persuasive about Art's work is that it's clear he finds his readers entirely worthy of the truth, that we can handle the truth. Indeed, we must. Dear Marty, We Crapped in Our Nest, Notes from the Edge of the World, is Art's 2025 book of essays, fashioned as a letter to his high school buddy, Martin Case, reflections and a call to action on the utter transformation of the place he's called home for most of his life. He has a lot to say to and about the people and place he clearly loves and maybe mourns, knows so well, and yet still wonders at and about, which is why he's here. Art's journalism seems deeply rooted in both curiosity and community, sending out tendrils and sprouts, breaking ground in search of how we came to be who we are, where we are, how on earth we got here, and where exactly we might be headed. I am delighted to have Art Cullen join me today from Storm Lake. So welcome, Art.
Well, thanks, Lynn. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's fun to have you. And congratulations on the Pulitzer and the PBS documentary. And and now the book. You're a busy man.
Well, thanks. Yeah, fun to have a book, although I probably reach more people through a column.
Well, we'll see. So there's so many places I want to start. But do you call it Dear Marty? Do you call it We Crapped in Our Nest? How do you refer to the book?
I refer to it as the book.
But I would say
Dear Marty, We Crapped in Our Nest is how I would refer to it. But that's too long for a headline. So maybe Dear Marty would be appropriate.
In my head, I've been calling it Dear Marty because it has struck me. It's not a love letter, but it's a letter of love, it seems to me, about this people and these place that you love and want to see really clearly, which I think is kind of the ultimate curiosity practice.
Oh, to see something clearly.
Yeah.
I can see clearly now the rain is gone.
It's more that you want to see it clearly. Feels like the curiosity practice.
Well, yeah, I'd like to see things clearly. I don't know that I ever do because we're constantly fighting a game of obfuscation. It's become a high martial art.
Yeah, yeah.
Breaking down facades.
Yeah.
And walls that stand in the way of the question why.
Mm-hmm. So the Pulitzer is recognition from your peers. How significant is it that a small local paper received that award? Because I went and I looked at the list, and it's a lot of big names on that list.
Well, I don't know how significant it is, but it's rare. We're the second smallest newspaper ever to win a Pulitzer. The one that was smaller than us, that's now bigger than us because of just the growth of California. But yeah, we were the smallest paper ever to win a Pulitzer. And so that's fairly rare. And it came at just the right time because we're going broke simultaneously. And so the Pulitzer helped pull our fat out of the fire. That's the significance to me, is that it kept the newspaper afloat while we were heading into the pandemic, really.
Yeah, and of course the documentary kind of...
Well, yeah, the documentary hit immediately during the pandemic, and which saved us. It saved the newspaper from bankruptcy, or at least insolvency, I should say.
So I got my start with the show at a local independent media organization. So I'm curious, though, to talk to you about the importance of local and independent journalism. I mean, if you're so close to the edge all of the time, why keep doing what you do?
Well, because I don't know what else to do. I don't golf. Prostate cancer interrupted my sex life. So what else is there to do but bitch about things?
Yeah, but this goes further back than those.
When we were raised by a pair of Irish Catholic Democrats, my mother's greatest ambition for us would be to be a U.S. senator or an orthodontist. But preferably a U.S. senator or a priest, really, but that didn't work out. But really, we were raised around the dinner table on Sundays, arguing about politics. It was an FDR household. And it was we were raised in the midst of the Vietnam War, and Woodward and Bernstein were about to become big names. I graduated the first post-Watergate class from college in 1979, and so it just seemed like a natural way to go. And my brother John is in the newspaper business, my brother Jim, my brother Tom was a speechwriter, my sister was a legal secretary. We're all writers at heart, and so it just seemed like a natural thing.
Do you think the story in Storm Lake would be different if other people were as curious about what's happening around them as you have been?
Well, I could put that a different way. Would the Storm-like story have been told in the same way by a chain publication with, you know, a crappy newspaper? No, it wouldn't have been. And I was born in Storm-like. My brother John was 5 years old or whatever when we moved here, 7 years old when we moved here. So, you know, it's a labor of love to a certain extent. And that nobody could speak to Storm-like like we can because we live here. And just like nobody can speak to New York like the Sulzbergers, mm-hmm. I would like to think. The owners of the New York Times, by the way.
So I want to go back to what you said about the story would have been told very differently by a larger franchised paper from someplace else. Can we talk a little bit about independent journalism's role in democracy?
I mean, it's foundational. Because the presumption is that you have an informed democracy in order to have viable elections. And community journalism is that basic bridge between power and the people. Yeah. And I still believe that, despite all the cynical comments about the media. I still believe that we are that bridge and that you cannot cross a bridge on social media, which is just cacophony, that we have to be, you know, singing from the same songbook. The Des Moines Register was for generations that common songbook for the state of Iowa. Then it was sold to Gannett many years ago and it disintegrated. And so has the civic discourse in Iowa. Simultaneously to the demise of the Des Moines Register. We're not Iowa nice anymore. We're Iowa nasty.
Mm.
Our civic debate revolves around Trump bump checks for agriculture. We're a bunch of welfare queens in agriculture now. And we've become a cynical shadow of our former selves because, I believe, of the disintegration of the Des Moines Register. And now they're trying to disintegrate Iowa's public media system in the form of Iowa Public Radio and PBS. That was the last vestige of a common conversation that Iowans could have together. And it was a unique situation because, you know, very few states had a statewide newspaper. Minnesota did, Minneapolis Tribune, and Des Moines did in the Des Moines Register. The political culture that resulted from that was squeaky clean, notoriously. Also, in New Hampshire, had a very strong conservative statewide newspaper. As a result, we developed reputations for squeaky clean politics, and that's eroded in subsequent years.
So this is really interesting. It raises a question for me about what constitutes news versus what makes its way into newspapers now. For you, what is news?
News is whatever you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Or things that you do know, but that are reported to you in a new way, maybe. Uh-huh. I guess, you know, kind of like pornography. I know it when I see it.
I've been thinking about this because
the essential the essential question of news is why, you know, why did that happen? A murderer ran through the streets. Why? Why was he running through the streets?
And
why
did
people vote for Donald Trump? It's a mystical question.
And for you, if it didn't happen in Buena Vista County, it didn't happen.
Right.
So your news is very local. You know, the subtitle on your book is Notes from the Edge of the World. I'm like, I don't think so. I kind of think that Iowa is like the center of the universe. As goes Storm-like,
except
we're so
treated
goes the
as
world.
We're treated as if we're the edge of the world and yeah. As if we're rubes.
Mm.
And that we really must not have anything worthy to say to an Ivy League educated elite because we are indeed flyover country. We feel it. We in Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa feel it, and we resent it. That's what led to the election of Trump, by the way. is the complete abandonment and disenfranchisement of rural America. And the Washington Beltway, to the extent that it's the liberal elite, still don't get it. They still don't understand it.
If you were going to ask the liberal elite to be just a little more curious about the flyover country,
right,
where would you start? What would you like them to be doing?
Show up.
Mm-hmm. And?
Listen.
And?
That would be a start. Instead, what are they saying? No, we don't want to come to Iowa. We want to get rid of the Iowa caucuses because you're too white. That's their excuse. So they're pigeonholing us. We're too white. Well, who did we nominate twice for president? Barack Obama? Hello? Who won the Iowa caucuses to break the black ceiling? Jesse Jackson? Who else would have voted for Jesse Jackson but Iowans? Come on, you know? They do not want to sully themselves. So the first thing they have to do is show up. The last thing Joe Biden and Kamala Harris wanted to do was show up. They placed fourth and fifth in Iowa. To show up and listen. Otherwise, we'll have Don Jr. and then Eric and then whoever else, Barron Trump and Ivanka, they'll be running this country for the next 200 years.
You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm your host, Lynn Borton, and my guest is Art Cullen. We're talking about curiosity, local media, and democracy. So I was really interested. There was a wonderful line, I don't remember at what point it was in the documentary, with a guy who was thumbing through the paper, and he goes, you know, a lot of people don't agree with him, but we always read him. And I was struck by that because that was a willingness to listen.
Right.
And, you know, be attentive to a perspective that's not one's own. Do you think that...
Remember, he was turning past the opinion page and he says, opinions are like, everybody's got one.
Oh, but that was somebody else.
Oh, okay.
That was somebody else.
You're talking about the woman. The man said opinions are like, and then the woman is the one who said, I'm a Republican. So once again, women are more open-minded than men.
Do you think that's true?
Yeah.
Why do you think that's true?
I don't know. I suppose it has to do with the history between men and women, that women are forced to deal with all sorts of situations that men just walk away from, probably. That's my amateur anthropologist speaking.
So how do you think curiosity shapes what we think of as news? What you think of as news, what your wife Dolores thinks of as news, are they the same thing? Are you curious about the same things?
No, actually, we're not curious about the same things. So it's essential that she is part of the newspaper because women control about 80% of all subscription purchases. So it's essential that we follow her lead. And she has a perspective on, you know, she's at the speech contests, and I'm more interested in what's going on at the legislature. Uh-huh. And she's more interested in what's going on in the schools. It's a good mix.
It's a good mix, yeah, yeah. Politically, Storm Lake is where on the political spectrum?
Well, within the city limits of Storm Lake, it's purple to blue.
Mm-hmm.
You get 1 mile outside the city limits and it turns deep red immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Storm Lake voted for the city of Storm Lake voted, which is, again, about 12,000 people. The county's population is about 20,000. Storm Lake comprises more than half the county's population, but still the county voted votes red, but Storm Lake generally votes blue, except for the Biden-Harris election. The Latinos stayed home, And so Trump actually won Storm Lake for the, and that was the first Republican victory in Storm Lake in several cycles. It speaks to why Biden and Harris lost is because they didn't campaign.
So how is it to run a progressive editorial shop in a conservative environment?
It's not a profitable enterprise. We lost $70,000 the year we won the Pulitzer Prize. And again, we were going...
As kind of blowback?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we lost a lot of advertisers. And we were called an enemy of the people. And so we lost about 70 grand that year. And that's comes out of my brother John and I don't wear overalls because they're fashionable. We can't afford a $70,000 loss. Mm-hmm. And so, and then again, we were going broke going into the pandemic. It was 2020. And we had lost all these advertisers and the newspaper industry. We weren't alone. The newspaper industry itself was getting bludgeoned. And yeah. And so, yeah, we were going broke at it. And then what happened is this documentary came out and donations saved us. It rekindled my spirit, my American spirit, that people are good. And they want to be Democrats in a, with a small D. They want democracy to survive. And just when I thought that it was over.
So are you optimistic? Hopeful?
I'm hopeful, but not optimistic.
Yeah.
I'm realistic, I think. And that is that right now we're living under an authoritarian regime that is murdering people in the streets and is operating a secret police, a masked secret police. This is not a time to be optimistic. It's a time to be realistic and to be hopeful. And I'm right now frightened for democracy. I'm frightened for the republic. That they are arresting journalists now.
Mm-hmm.
Don Lemon and Gloria Fort, who, by the way, attended the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota, as did I.
All right.
She's an alumna along with me. And we're proud of her for for getting arrested. All alumni are proud of her. And democracy is in peril right now.
So do you think curiosity can help? And if so, how?
Can curiosity help democracy? Yes. Democracy demands curiosity. Because if you don't ask why, you don't care. And so curiosity shows that you care about what the issues are, that you care about your neighbors, you care about your schools. You wonder, you know, I'm 68 years old, soon to be 69, and I'm interested and curious about the elementary school. And I'm curious about why Iowa's losing OBGYNs, even though we're past the baby stage. And it's because we're hostile to women in Iowa. That's why we're losing OBGYNs. So I'm curious. Curious is what shapes the issues. Why is it this way? Why in the breadbasket of America are the food pantries going bare? Why is that? That is democracy in action right there. When, how is it that we can't even feed the people in Storm Lake? And why is it that when we're chasing off Latinos and putting them in detention centers, do we realize that they are the ones that are providing us our food from the fields of California to the meatpacking plants in Storm Lake, Iowa? They're the, you know, if you stop and ask why, that's a question. Why are we deporting these people when they're the ones cutting our pork and beef? And if you think beef prices are expensive now, wait until you ship out all the Mexicans. see how expensive it gets. Those are all why questions that are essential to democracy and to our civic, our personal well-being.
So you had good curiosity advice for the flyover elites. Do you have good curiosity advice for your fellow Iowans?
Yes, ask why. Why is it that we are the richest place on earth and we can't feed ourselves? We import 80% of our food in Iowa. We're the number one, well, actually number two ag state behind California. And we can't feed ourselves. Why is that? Why is it that we are polluting the Gulf of Mexico to grow corn and suffocating the shrimping industry so we can grow corn? Those are two essential questions for Iowans to ask themselves. How did we become so poor in the richest place on earth? And it is the richest place on earth, with top soil that at one time was 3 feet deep, rich glacial loam that we're washing down the Mississippi River as we farm every last inch of Iowa. And how did we get here? How did we crap in our nest?
Yeah. I'm going to let that sit right there. Well, before I let you go, are you game for my big jar of wannabe analogies?
Okay.
Okay. A little abrupt transition. Here we go. Okay. So I have an actual jar. I have slips of paper in here with random words written on them. And we're going to make an analogy to curiosity with whatever is on here. Okay. Yours is grout. How is curiosity like grout? Mine is a dead battery. And I have one for our listeners. So do you want to give it a shot or should I go ahead?
Well, curiosity is like grout in that it holds people together. If I'm curious about you, I'm more likely to be neighborly towards you.
Nice. Very nice. Okay, dead battery. Well, I think curiosity is a potential, and a dead battery is a potential unrealized. And curiosity unrealized is about as good as a dead battery. That's how they're alike, I guess.
There you go.
And listeners, yours is a pomegranate. How is curiosity like a pomegranate? Let me know. Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, hashtag analogy.
Well, curiosity is an antioxidant.
Okay. I like that. Good for our health.
I think that pomegranate doesn't have antioxidants or something.
I'll buy that. I think I'll totally buy that. So I have
it's
one
expensive,
last...
I know that.
Oh man, yeah. I have one last question because I had to laugh out loud. You have an ice out day in Storm Lake, and I did a double take in the current environment about ice out. And Dolores had this wonderful line in the documentary about returning to it. Maybe you hadn't covered it for a couple of years and then you went back to it. And she said, maybe it's more interesting than we used to think.
Well, yeah, I guess metaphorically. Yeah, no.
To me, that sort of summed up this sense that things are news because we decide that they're interesting and important to us, and we decide that things...
I was thinking of the ICE out as an immigration, customs, enforcement.
I know, right.
Yeah.
But you have this, the ICE, you know, breaks up to the point where you can actually get from one side of the lake to the other. But we don't hear it the same way right now, right?
Yeah, right.
But thinking about this local news item that had this name that caught my attention for completely unrelated reasons... And realizing what we think is important ebbs and flows with what we pay attention to and decide to be curious about.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, ice out. It's a double entendre.
It is indeed.
Yeah.
All right. Now, was there anything you wanted to talk about with curiosity and Dear Marty or anything else that we didn't touch on?
Well, I hope people buy the book. Daddy needs a new pair of shoes. Thank you, Lynn.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. It's my pleasure. You've been listening to a Choose to be Curious conversation. Many thanks to my illustrious, industrious guest, Art Cullen. links to the Storm Lake Times pilot and Dear Marty, We Crapped in Our Nest on my website at choosetobecurious.com. You can share your pomegranate analogy on Facebook, Instagram, and Blue Sky at choosetobecurious, hashtag analogy. That's it for Sprouts. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Other music you heard included Weather Vane by Cloud Cover via Blue Dot Sessions. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg. That's URSULA at pacifica.org. That's URSULA at pacifica.org. This week's episode was produced by me, Lynn Borton, here in Arlington, Virginia. Thank you for listening, and see you next time on Sprouts.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
This is Wings. Somalia is a country that occupies the coast of the Horn of Africa, jutting into the Arabian Sea. Convenient for trade with the Middle East and Asia, it's also been vulnerable to occupations and conflict for at least 1,300 years. Nowadays, around 2 million Somali refugees and their descendants live in exile communities dotted around the world. In many places, they are not too welcome.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Here's our Wings reporter in Mombasa, Kenya, Diana Wanyonyi, interviewing Firdaus Ahmed, a Somali refugee.